questions, what other people always experience the issue of the network and all that. I'm not going to be able to open my video because it's going to affect my audio. So, Mr. Sakaza, you'll also chair the parliamentary session. Otherwise, that means I'll be in and out of this meeting, which that thing is not going to be right. Honourable members, we are here again today under very difficult conditions in terms of our country, in terms of the alert level 4 and the issue of the pandemic. Hoping that as we are continuing doing our work, we will explain to our people the importance of wearing a mask,
was recording in progress.
Social distance and staying at home where possible, but assist those that need to be assisted in terms of them having to get their vaccine. I think that should be our day-to-day work. But in doing that, we must also take care of ourselves. We must not be reckless, but obviously we can't be folding our arms. I will then request Mr. Sakaza to take us through. I think all necessary documents were forwarded to members, and I see Mr. Mjekani is with us. And I will then request Mr. Sakaza to take us through, and then a roll call. Then after that, I will then take through the committee on what then is then our business for today. Over to you, Mr. Sakaza.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to all my members and the guests and the department. Chair, before I start, can I just get a direction from Chair? There is somebody who's waiting on the waiting room is by a number, 373453. We have been cautious, myself and Portia, to admit, don't have met. So I want to get direction from Chair whether we admit that person because he's been standing in the queue. Doesn't have a name, we can't contact him. Okay. Having said that, let me continue then with the attendance register. Chair, we've got the following members today. We've got Honorable Chair Dunzwa, Honorable Ngabane, Honorable Ndabe, Honorable Nonfele, Honorable Zuma, Honorable Begram, Honorable Kado, Honorable Yinana, Honorable Mkondo, and Honorable Dene. And then from the parliamentary staff, we've got myself, Chair, Poshia, the committee assistant, Ngobo, the content advisor, Mkwena, the researcher. We've got Mr. Mjengwane, as you've mentioned, Chair, the parliamentary legal advisor. We've got Soraya Williams, the state law advisor. And we also have from PMG, Roald Smith. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sakaza. You know, the problem with the virtual meetings is that people at times, they're really taking advantage of the situation. And I think if a person does not, I'm not quite sure whether either the department is aware of that number, because again tomorrow, if that person is not being admitted, it's going to make a whole hullabaloo that we have refused him a permission to come in. Let him in at the time that they are to introduce themselves. If he's not introducing himself is not telling us who he is, because that's what they do. That's what they will do when they are physically in, if this meeting was in Parliament. So we are still doing as we always been doing. A person who is in the committee must at least tell us who they are and which company they are coming from. That I think we'll have to do that for now. Can we get from the department who's here?
Good morning, Honorable Chair. My name is Virgil Seafield, and I just want to list the members of the Department of Labor, that is Employment and Labor, that is in the meeting. There is Mr. Karabo Mahafane that is here, Matapelo Matapoho that is here, Tembinkosi Mkalipi that is here in the meeting. I've also noticed, Chair, and I'm not quite sure whether the person waiting in the waiting room is the acting DG of the department, Ms. Egi Moilwa. She has just contacted me that she's struggling. She's in the waiting room and she can't come into the meeting. And therefore, I'm not sure whether she is in the meeting. And then as well, Ms. Honorable Chair, the Deputy Minister is also in the meeting. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Good morning.
Thank you very much. Can we humbly request our guests, if there are any, to introduce themselves?
Good morning, Chairperson, Members. It's General Smith from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members, Members of the Department and other guests. It's Tim Hughes, Spokesperson for the Injured Workers Action Group.
Well, if others are quiet,
sorry, Chair, it's Ekimuilo. I'm sorry to just chip in, Honourable Chair. I just wanted to indicate that I've since been let in, Egimilwa, acting DG, on behalf of DG Lamati, who's on leave. Thank you, Chair.
So it's you that was using that number. Okay, no, that's fine. We don't have any other guests.
You, Chair, they must still introduce themselves.
Chair, can I? We've got a colleague, Kumswagi Mamashela, who's registered as a coroner.
Okay.
It's received from the Department of Labor, but she's using a coroner's computer.
Okay. All right. If there is that, I think some of the areas have been clarified. I'm doing this, Honourable Members. You may find that maybe it's something that is a bit petty or it's a waste of time. It's because the committee staff is forever being harassed by people who have others you don't know whether they were in the meeting. And when I checked with them, some will tell me that no, I got this information from my source. I don't understand what is this. Maybe it is the challenge of these virtual meetings, but nevertheless, at least we must know who is in our meeting or not. Secondly, to all those that are guests who are not members of the portfolio committee, they must understand that they are not to lift up their hands. Theirs is just to observe, listen. They are not to ask questions that to be asked by members, people that are going to be interacting with one another, its members and the department. Otherwise, anybody who's outside the portfolio committee or who's not a member of parliament, nor a member of the department, wouldn't then be given an opportunity to speak if a need arises. Having said that, I think we've got two items in our agenda. One is that, just to recap with members, remember that last time, last week we were to have two meetings, which was going to be a Wednesday and a Thursday. And because of some of the weighty issue that we felt that we must give honorable members an opportunity so that when we then come up with our A list, we come with our A list having received what then members were proposing to be a reworking on clause 43, section 73. And there were other proposals also that were also raised by Honorable Nontlele, among others, which then there was nobody that had an issue with that. But to give an opportunity for the committee, because the bill, the deliberations of the bill are a process where you ensure that at least you give members a time to interact and put whatever we put in the A list, with the understanding that it is not the end. We are still going to have a report. We are still going to table, submit that report to Parliament for it to be ATC. And the last leg, which will then put that in the chamber for the House to either adopt or whatever. For the House, in fact, to adopt, that will be our as the chair, that will be my view, that the House will then have to adopt. But we will still have been given an opportunity to advance whatever we want to advance as political parties. So I just want members to understand that it's not the end now. We are still going to, we are almost towards the end. And the last leg, which will then be, again, raise our views, talk against or for, because that is our constitutional right and responsibility in terms of the rules and the constitution of our country. So members must just be free that we are not, it's not that we are finishing everything here. We will still table that in the House. Having said that, the two items in the agenda is that Mr. Mchengwane will take us through the A list and the areas where we will still have to engage, and when it's needed, the department will then come, and then we will then adopt our A list, and then the second item will then be the Convention 190, the ratification of Convention 190. And that the department will then just take us through their plan in terms of the gender-based violence in the workplace. Because Convention 190 is talking about harassment, all sorts of harassment that will then be outlined by the department. I'm of the understanding that members have then been circulated all the documents. Having said that, I will then request Mr. Mchengwane to take us through. Over to you, Mr. Mchengwane. I hope he is in, Solan.
Yes, I am in, Chairperson. Good morning to you and honorable members. Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Before Mr. Solan starts, I just wanted the meeting to record the apology of the minister who's still in cabinet meeting.
Oh, sorry, CM. You know, CM. You know this thing that we are dealing with the bills. At times, the members of the executive are not in. Sorry for that. We will record that. You will come in when you are dealing with the Convention 190. Thank you very much. Mr. Mchengwane?
Yes, thank you again, Chairperson. Good morning to you and to honorable members. Chair, today, as you have mentioned, Chairperson, we are dealing with the list
of committee amendments as proposed by the committee during the last meeting of the committee discussing the COIS bill, the COIS amendment bill. We have prepared to present a draft list of amendments, the so-called A list, for the consideration of the committee, and I will be taking the committee through the amendments this morning. Chair, just to quickly recap for members, that today as we go through the A list, members will be directed throughout the process by mentioning the page number of the bill that is being considered, and also the line which is on the right-hand side of the bill, the line that will be amended. Chairperson, I just thought I would mention that, that's for ease of reference. Chair, we are going to start on page 2 of the A list, and I assume, Chairperson, that members have a copy of the A list in front of them. We start in that page, page 2, Chairperson, with the amendment of clause 1, which was proposed by members. So on this page 2, in line number 10 of page 2, after the word illness in that line, the members propose that we insert occupational. I don't know if you members are there or if you found that line, Chair. Line 10 of the bill, we after the word illness was to insert occupational.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kakaza, why this is not put on the screen?
Oh, okay, Chair. I can share it. Let me go get it and then share it on the screen.
And it's supposed to be shared.
Okay.
Not even for me asking. Can it be shared, please?
Yes, sir. Right.
Sorry, honorable members, for that. Thank you.
May I please proceed, Chair?
Yes, you may.
Yes, Chairperson. So that word occupational will come after illness and just before disease. So the sentence will read illness, comma, occupational disease with that amendment. And then on the same clause, Chairperson, we're on page 3, we have in line 50, after the word republic, we are to omit member of. On line 50, Chair, or in line 50, on page 3, after the word republic, we are to omit member of. That's the amendment to clause 1, Chairperson.
I don't think, are there any comments, honorable members? You may proceed, Mr. Mchenwan.
Our next amendment, Chairperson, is on clause 8. Clause 8 of the bill, Chair. In page 7. Or on page 7. Our first amendment is on page 7 in line 53. Where we omit and life enhancement assistance. On page 7, line 33, we omit on life enhancement assistance. On the same clause 8, Chairperson, on page 7, in line 34, after the word injuries end, we are to insert occupational. On the same clause, Chair, on page 7, in line 34, after the word diseases, we are to omit end, the word end. And on page 7, after line 34, we are to insert J. So the J that's there will move consequentially to be K. We would insert J, which reads as follows, Chair. Provide psychosocial support subsequent to occupational injury or occupational disease, comma, which forms part of clinical, comma, vocational and social rehabilitation services, semicolon, end. Thank you, Chair. And then, Chairperson, that lastly, underneath that, on this clause, there will be that consequential amendment of the current J in the bill becoming
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mchengwane. Any comments, honorable members? If there are none, can you take us through to 33?
Clause 33 changes the next amendment clause, where the text changes in the following manner. On page 14, from line 7, we are to omit the word "in terms of any regulation made under." So we remove the bolded word there in brackets, and it was made under Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act 28 of 2002. Full stop, Chairperson. That's the amendment in that clause, clause 33. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Members, if there are no comments, can you take us to the next one?
The next one is 41, Chairperson, which reads as follows. It's on page 16. On page 16, in line 13, after the word "be," we omit "may" and substitute it with "must." Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think that is clear.
And then on page 40, on page 43, Chairperson, sorry, on clause 43, my apologies, Chair, same page, page 3 of the list of amendments, and page 16 of the amendment bill. From line 47, to omit subsection 4 and to substitute the following subsection 4. And then this is where, Chairperson, we had options from various members of the committee. We have three options which we have formulated in text for the members' consideration, Chairperson. I will just read out all of the amendments, Chairperson, for the committee's consideration and decision on which of the clauses will prevail in that clause. May I just continue to read the three options, Chair?
Yes, sir.
The first option, Chair, is 4A. No third party will be allowed to transact with the compensation fund unless they are registered with the compensation fund in the manner as prescribed. B, all third parties that are already transacting with the compensation fund must register with the compensation fund within 6 months after the commencement of the compensation for occupational injuries and diseases amendment act of 2021. That's the first option, Chair. The second option is 4A. Notwithstanding the provisions of subsections 1, 2 and 3, a third party cannot be registered unless the minister is certified that such third party, 1, has the capacity, qualification, financial resources, systems and forces to provide quality and ethical services, and 2, has the status of a broad-based black economic empowerment. And then B, 1, all registered third parties must display their registration certificate in the manner as prescribed. Post of 2, a registration certificate is valid for 3 years and may be renewed in the prescribed manner. Post of. That's option 2, Chair. And the last option, which is the third one, reads as follows. Any third party claiming medical costs from the compensation fund, either on behalf of a medical practitioner or in respect of any rights ceded to it by a medical practitioner, must be registered with the Council for Debt Collectors in accordance with the Debt Collectors Act of 1998. Full stop. Thank you, Chairperson. Those are the three options.
Thank you, honorable members. Can I allow hands for comments, acceptance?
Mkonto, Chair.
Honorable Mkonto, who's next?
Thank you, Ram, Chair.
Honorable Bigram. Dana, please, Chair. Honorable Dana.
Order.
Honorable Cardo.
Montpelle.
Honorable Montpelle. Thank you, that was so Honorable Mkonto. And Honorable Bakram, Honorable Dana, Honorable Cardo, Honorable Nonsel.
Honorable Mkonto.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. The Deputy Minister and head team from the department and our guests. Chair, I would propose I support option one and option two, but with a bit of their combination and a bit of addition for the two. Chair, if maybe option one and two can, if combined, can read as follows. Not a party will be allowed to transact with the compensation fund unless they are registered with the compensation fund in the manner as prescribed, taking account of capacity, qualification, financial resources, systems and process to provide quality and ethical services, and status of broad-based black economic empowerment. And then all third parties that are already transacting with the compensation fund will continue to transact with the compensation fund until they are registered within 6 months after the registration process has been prescribed. Chair, we are trying to avoid a vacuum between the existing act and the new act, that the third parties must be given that 6 months to both practice and be given an opportunity to register. And then the additional one, Chair, that is not in here is, if a third party is refused registration, then reasons for refusal must be provided in writing within 7 working days of notification. Thanks for the opportunity, Chair.
Honourable Mkonde, Honourable Begram.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate it, and thank you for the opportunity. In essence, we've left out one option, and that is scrapping it altogether. We had raised this last time, and I see you haven't put it down as an option. I'm not sure whether that is duplicitous or whether it was a mistake. But we need to have the option of scrapping it altogether. The other thing I wanted to comment on is when you have, in terms of these options, the registration of that party, you've left it entirely for the minister to be satisfied. And I see you've got a few, in terms of option two, you've got a few reasons as to how he could satisfy himself or not, but it's purely an administrative decision and doesn't come back to any legislation or to Parliament. So it's the minister has the power to decide, actually, I don't like that third party because I don't think they have the capacity. And you can't take it any further and he decides. I think that is wrong as well. So thank you for listening to me.
Can I just establish from honourable members, because we are raising something that you are saying we should have then had the fourth option, which is to scrap it all together. Are members agreeing with that? I'm raising this because I thought it was because of your input last week when you said it must be scrapped off, and then a proposal on reworking instead, and then that's why we are here. So I really don't understand why you want that to be put as an option, because it's already there and you have already discarded it. Honorable Dana? Honorable Mkonde and Honorable Ndabe?
Chair.
Chair, you have already covered me, because I wanted to remind fellow honourable members that at the end, as a conclusion, you gave us an opportunity to make submissions. I don't know whether, Chair, in those submissions, what is being the option that is being proposed now was part of those submissions, because we're given an opportunity to make submissions, Chair. So maybe we have to check if in those submissions that were presented, was there an option to say it must be scrapped? Thank you.
I'm covered, Chair, by Honourable Mkonto. Thanks.
Thank you. Honourable Dana?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. May I just ask that we slide up to option 3, which I proposed, so I can just give a little bit of background about why I proposed it. Firstly, it refers to the Debt Collectors Act and for third parties to be registered as with the Council of Debt Collectors. And the reason why I say that is because the Debt Collectors Act is already an act with a strict compliance criteria and a code of conduct. If third parties register with this body, then there won't be an extra and additional administrative burden on the compensation fund. We know that they are already up to their necks in administrative work, so there won't be an extra administrative burden on them. Third parties will be regulated, which is the most important, which is what this amendment aims to do and what the department wants to do. And then fourthly, through the complaints and disciplinary process that is already in the Council for Debt Collector, in the Act, the Debt Collectors Act, the compensation fund can deal with all third parties on an equal and consistent and regulated basis. So in short, this will reduce the administrative burden and it will still regulate third parties. So that is the rationale behind my proposal. Chair, so if we cannot accept that, I would have to also support the notion that the entire amendment should be scrapped. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Dana. Honourable Kado?
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I would just like to reiterate the call I made last week for the scrapping of 43.4 for all the reasons that were outlined last week about its potential catastrophic impact on the healthcare sector and the fact that people stand to lose their jobs if this amendment goes through. So I don't think we need to actively have tabled the fact in the submission process of removing it. As some of the other honourable members have said, we made it very clear last week that we think it's a very bad idea for this to go ahead. So I stand by the fact that it should be withdrawn entirely. I am, however, prepared to entertain the suggestion made by Honourable Dana. In other words, option 3 is a compromise measure. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Nonchale.
Morning, Honourable Chair, morning, Honourable Members, Honourable Deputy Minister, and our guests. Honourable Chair, I'm speaking in support of option 1. That the formulation as proposed should in fact be the one that is accepted, on the understanding that option 1 does in fact take into account all the areas that we in fact, except for those arguments that seek to take away the powers of regulation. I'm not going to argue on those because I don't think it's going to be helpful for us. Rather, what we want to resolve is a problem that is currently in existence in the operations of the fund and of the systems that are in place, so that we in fact do not in fact live perpetually with the problems that in fact are afflicting the fund, including the negative audit outcomes. Chair, having said so, I must also appreciate the input that has been put forward by Honourable Mkonto and the proposal that just so that we read from the same page, because if you read on our on my proposal, that is option one, that no third party will be allowed to transact with the compensation fund unless they are registered in the compensation fund in the manner as prescribed. The process of prescription chair by the minister would in fact result in the articulation of all the conditions or preconditions that would in fact have to be complied with by all the parties. And in my view, I think all the points that are contained on option two by Honorable Mkhondo do in fact go into that category of prescription. I'm not saying that they are not valid to be carried in the bill, but the point is that the elaboration, because they elaborate on the points that on option one, so the elaboration therefore would therefore defeat the purpose of prescription if it is done within the bill. So this includes even the point, the additional point that Honorable Mkhondo has made, that would in fact also be defeating the process of prescription if we in fact incorporate this into the bill. So my proposal would be that we should in fact take all those proposals into the prescription process on the understanding that we have a comfortable and agreed principle that these in fact are in fact essential to ensure that all the shortcomings and challenges that we've lived with or experience through the fund, as already I've outlined earlier on, are in fact dealt with once and for all. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
No, thank you, Honorable Nonsele. Before I hope the department is listening as always, and also attentively. Because they are new, there are some new additions that has then been inserted, raised by Honorable Mkhondo. But if I can just be, the legal fundis will correct in simple terms, is that in what, looking into what Honorable Mkhondo has proposed, is that will those not be correct if they to me it falls under the regulation part, which the regulation part is easy, should I say, I don't know what will be the legal term, it's easy to, I don't want to say manage, because people will read too much in that. But administratively, the regulations, rather than putting that in the act, because it then means from time to time, if there are challenges, you must quickly go back to the act. Whereas if they fall under regulations, at least from if things arises and you think that you must tighten those, it's easier when you do that in the regulations. And I just wanted, as you will then be, as you have been listening to all of the members, all of us, please, even on that, try and advise. I will give over to the department. I'm of the understanding that Mr. Mchengane is also here to do that, and both Parliament, legal and both the department will then will I hope they have managed to interact even now as you are speaking, you know, technology, you can communicate with other person whilst you are in the meeting. I don't know who wants to start. Can I start with the department, Mr. Mkhalipi?
Thank you, Chair, and members and colleagues and the deputy minister. The options that are put on the table, as Honorable Natsel has indicated, option one covers all the issues that were raised by Honorable Mkhonto, even the proposal to make sure that there's no breakdown, that those organizations that are already transacting with the fund will be given time frame to register. That will ensure that they are not cut out because of the requirement for registration. And as Honorable Nontswele has indicated, all of the issues that are raised by Honorable Mkhonto are issues that could be easily put on regulations. And the issues raised by Honorable Bagrain on the role of Parliament in regulation, nothing prevents Parliament in saying to the Minister, when the regulation is published, come talk to us on this regulation that you are publishing. And the Minister and Department will oblige, and the Department has never refused at any stage to come and brief Parliament. And we think that option one with the regulation gives the necessary flexibility so that, as the Honorable Chair has indicated, if things changes, the market changes, the things are in the regulation is easy to change. As members would know, it takes a long process to change a law than to change a regulation. If the market changes, you need to change some of the conditions that are put in for registration, then you are able to change it quick in the regulation. And as I indicated, from the department, we think a regulation one, which will incorporate easily all the issues in regulation two regulation, is a far better option. But it's up to the members to indicate on this. The third option, I mean, as the honourable members indicated, the department and the fund will have been at the control of the council that has been set up. If the council register you and something goes wrong in the operation with the fund, there's nothing that the fund can do. As long as you are registered in terms of that formulation, you'll have to transact with the fund, and it takes out the control and the management of the process and defeat the rationale for the initial proposal that was put on the table. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mkhonto. Mr. Mchengane, is there anything that you want to say before?
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay. Chairperson, I align myself with the view of Mr. Mkhalipi regarding the option. That option one would suffice. Of course, with the regulations being put before the committee for consideration before they come into operation, to operationalize that option. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Sorry, Chair. We've got also the state law advisors who were party to this process who are also in the meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, thank you. Can they indicate, is it possible for us to see their face?
Oh, I'm going to be smashing.
Who is she?
Hi.
It's Ms. Maria Williams from the State Law Advisor's Office.
Good morning, T.
Morning. Morning, ma'am.
Yeah. My name is Williams.
Okay. Ms. Williams.
Yeah. And I'm from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Okay.
Okay.
Any comments?
I aligned myself with what the department said and with regard to the placing some of the things in the regulations, I agree with that also to an extent. That's why we, when we drafted these various options, lots of it we put as prescribed by the minister. And with regard to option two, there's just one thing I want to add. The proposed clause 4A, where Mr. Bagram said that the minister is satisfied. So we're thinking of looking at, for example, where the minister, where the third party has demonstrated its ability, but to prescribe those conditions. So there's lots of these things which we agree should be prescribed. And that's why we have left in regulations, and that's why we've drafted with in the manner as prescribed. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable. Thank you, Ms. Williams. I think
think in the response of the department, I really want to, because from time to time, at times we respond on issues as if we don't have a responsibility of ensuring that we conduct oversight on areas which, because that's our responsibility. There's no minister that is allowed to do as can Ms. Ndabeni close his hair video? Can she switch off her video? Okay. There is no minister, in my understanding, that is allowed to do as and when he or she pleases. From time to time, that is our responsibility that we call the minister. So I just want to make members to be at ease with that. It has never been in any committee in parliament that ministers, the members of the executive, are allowed to do as they wish, and because that thinking is a thinking that is not going to be allow, is not going to allow us to move forward, and at times that's not going to allow us to be objective when we are dealing with issues that are not to cover us, but issues that are for the benefit of everybody in the country, irrespective of the political affiliation. So I thought I just want members from they must be comfortable. We must not doubt, must not get a feel that at times we doubt our constitutional of our authority that were given by the constitution of the land and the rules of parliament, of what then becomes our responsibility. I think the unfortunate part in this time now, we're not going to put the A-list when that's what then has then been summarized in putting together one and two, and also the issue around the issue of the regulations. The scribers, Honorable Mkhondo, are requesting you, because you have got something that you have talked to which was not part of the submission. They are requesting you to put that in writing, I'm sure, to send it to them. I think having said that, Honorable Members,
Chair, I've already emailed to the Bakas.
Okay. Yeah. Can we then put the A list back on the screen, so that now that is the situation around clause 43, section 73. We are then now going to the next. Clause.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are still on the same clause, but on page 4 of the A list, on page 16 of the amendment bill, it is as follows, Chairperson. On page 16, after line 50, to add the following subsection. 5. For the purpose of this section, comma, a third party means any entity that transacts with the funds with the aim of assisting either the employee, comma, employer, comma, medical service provider or pensioner with the processing of claims at the compensation fund. Well, sure. Thank you, Chair.
Any comments? If there are none, you may proceed.
The next clause is clause 59, Chairperson. In that clause, it's on page 22 of the bill. It reads as follows. On page 22, in line 21, to omit Director General and substitute Commissioner. In that line, we replace DG with Commissioner, Chair. The second amendment, Chair, is on page 23, after line 13, to insert the following, which is a new three: no answer by any person to a question by an authorized person or an inspector conducting an investigation or inspection in terms of this act may be used against that person in any criminal proceedings except proceedings in respect of a charge of perjury or making a false statement. Full stop. Thank you, Chairman.
Any comments? We're in agreement with that.
Then, Chairperson, on that same page 5, we have new clauses. That is the first new clause. On page 24, after line 17 of page 24, to insert the following. The heading of the heading of the new clause will be transitional arrangement. And then 63.1 reads as follows, Chair, which is a new clause. Domestic workers and employers must report or submit a claim in the prescribed manner within 3 years from the date of the commencement of the Compensation for Occupational Diseases, Injuries and Diseases Amendment Act of 2021 for any accident that had occurred prior to the commencement of this act. Full stop. 2, the validity of the existing licenses issued to the mutual associations in terms of this act will remain effective until new agreements are entered into. Full stop. The next new clause, Chair, will be clause 3. No, then there's clause 63, Chairperson, which reads as follows. On page 27, in line 19, or to omit 63 and to insert 64. And on page 24, in line 20, after act, or to omit what is currently 2020 and insert 2021. Thank you, Chairperson. That is all of our list today. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Chair. Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you,
Chair.
Any comments from members? So that was the last clause.
Yes, Chairperson, it was. Thank you.
Any comments, honourable members? If there are none, there is an issue that was raised last week in terms of, which was in page 22. In terms of the powers, the appointment of the inspectors, which then, and I will request the department to assist me if I may be. There was a proposal by a person that was Mr. Kalipi around that when inspectors are to come to your house, they are to produce whatever information. If I can make an example, a police person can't just come into your house without having been given a, what do you call it? I nearly said a warrant. But a document that is enabling him or her to search your house. You can't just, and there was a proposal that was said that except in emergency cases, and I just want to understand and my apologies, Mr. Mkalipe and members, that I didn't raise that when it was, because I was still trying to really understand if then that is that insertion of that proposal that unless in emergency cases, is that correct? If Mr. Mkondo is able to pick that up, can he please assist me and the committee on that? Powers of entry, I think it's in 93C, which is in page 22.
Thank you, Chair. If members will remember, there was a proposal when this issue was raised. 93C presently says an inspector may enter a home or any other place only with the consent of the owner of or occupier, or authorized to do so in writing in terms of subsection 2. And then it goes further and says that the Labour Court may issue an authorization contemplated in section 1B, that's authorized entry. Now, there was a proposal that in an emergency, this consent should be waived. Now, in discussing this with the legal drafters, both the state law advisor and the parliamentary legal advisor, and we felt that it would be difficult to protest and if that is challenged constitutionally, because two things. Even the police have got to have a warrant authorized by a judge to enter restricted spaces. And the work of an inspector is not that urgent that it cannot be done tomorrow. Because remember, the inspector here is not dealing with injuries. They are dealing with, has the employer reported? Has the employer submitted the necessary information? Has the employer complied with the law? Now, if the inspector can't go in today and have that, the inspector can go. It's not an inspector going on to check whether somebody has died, because that's under Occupational Health and Safety Act that does that. This is purely on payment of worker that is already injured. The worker has already been injured in this case, and the inspector goes in to check whether that case was reported. And we felt that in the discussion with the colleagues, as I've said, from Parliament and legal section and the state law advisor, that it will be very difficult to justify, if it's challenged constitutionally, why would an inspector have more right than a police and even the NPA in terms of entering and seizing a document. And that was the issue. And we meant also to raise it in the committee that we think that it's not the right thing to do. And if you allow, Chair, can allow our colleagues from Parliamentary Legal and the State Law Advisor also to have a bite on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Is she still in the meeting? The state law advisor. Whilst you are still checking for her, Mr. Mchengane?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Our colleague, Mr. Mkhalifi, is correct. We had an extended discussion about this matter, and we thought that it is a matter that affects Section 14 of the Constitution, which is the right to privacy, and that it acts as a limitation to that right. And a limitation, Chairperson, as you remember, must be a limitation of a Bill of Rights must be balanced in terms of Section 36 of the Constitution, which is the test for limitation of constitutionally guaranteed rights. And in our analysis, Chairperson, we came to a conclusion that it would not be justifiable in an open and democratic society to limit the rights to privacy in terms of the limitation that is currently proposed in that clause. And we therefore came to a conclusion, Chairperson, that the powers granted to, in terms of the proposal, the powers granted to inspectors would be ultra vires and would not withstand scrutiny. Chairperson, thank you.
Chairperson,
thank you.
Sorry. Yes.
Chairperson, I concur with my learned colleagues who just spoke as well, because we had also discussion taking into account the functions of the inspectors as well as the nature of the offences involved. And then there's been a lot of jurisprudence which has been developed within our constitutional courts, most of them being against the Minister of Safety and Security. And lots of it has, because of the right to privacy, because of loss of the right to dignity, there's a lot of rights in the Bill of Rights that weighs against this. And there's even been a judgment, I think it was in, about 2019, where they even said that that the person, when you obtain a search warrant, the search warrant should even identify the person the name of the person conducting the search. It can't just be a general thing like a police officer. There's lots of strict requirements to ensure that when a search is undertaken, that the rights of all parties are balanced when conducting the search. So in light thereof, we took into account the nature of the functions of the inspector and the nature of the things which they must monitor. And we found that by giving them those powers would not be in correlation with their functions. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable members, I hope we are listening, and it's the responsibility of the legal people to advise us and correct us so that we don't, when things fall apart, we are then saying, but why were we not advised? We are still within the time of us being advised. Any comments? Which is 22.93.3. So we're in agreement with what the legal team is saying. Silence means.
Chair. It sounds in order. I was just thinking as they were presenting that maybe some emergencies will need the police themselves, looking at the bill that we are dealing with now, and the inclusion of the domestic workers. Maybe if there might be any emergency that might be proper to be attended to by the police themselves. Thank you, Chair.
Just to remind members, remember that here we are talking about, I think Mr. Mkalipi did raise this is talking about processing of claims and payments. It then means, Mr. Mkalib, at your time, when you have time and space, just if you can schedule it to us, because each and every inspectorate has got its rules and responsibilities. We can do that. Here it talks about processes of claims and payment of those thereof. So I think we are fine. Are there any comments about that correction? If there are no comments, it then means we are fine with the correction that has then been made. Can we then put formally the adoption of the A list? Can we get a formal mover?
Excuse me, Mdabe, Chair.
Honorable Mdabe.
I, Honorable Mr. Mdabe, formally move for adoption of the A list as it's been presented and amended. Thank you.
Thank you. Great,
Chair. Can I just ask a question of clarification?
Yes.
I'm not entirely sure how we've left clause 43 with those three different options. Could you enlighten me?
No. There's a view that is saying it must be scrapped off. Okay? There is a view. You have then said the compromise from you as the party is that you will then accept option three. That's your fault.
Be willing to entertain
it.
Entertain it, not to accept it. but I don't think any of the three proposals are strictly necessary, which is why really I think that clause 43 should be removed altogether. But my question is, how are we leaving it with these three different options on the table?
We are leaving it that one, there is the option one and option two is being agreed, and then it also had the portion that there are some of those that will fall under regulations. And then there is a view that says it's a your fallback position is to then to look to accept what is then in option three. Remember that here we are not going to be voting for or against, because we are still going for, we are going to be presenting first, we are going to have a report, but secondly, we are still going to table this in the House, where honourable members are then going to argue their views and say why they are in disagreement with this, why they think that, why they have made a fallback. And same applies to those that have made a proposal on how then can we regulate that sphere. As you people have saying that it's not even supposed to be here, we must scrap it off. I hope I'm understood. The process is not still yet, it's not yet closed. It will be closed when the House voted for or against these amendments. It's only at that time.
Okay.
Okay.
I just want to check whether is it not going to be helpful, because we have gone through a process that sought to consolidate a position with regard to our submission to the bill. The three options arise out of that process of consolidation. Therefore, it would, in my view, be correct to, in fact, to move with a consolidated view in this regard, so that we do not complicate the process that you are, in fact, talking to. Because that process should, in fact, now by that time, in my view, it would have at least resolved this issue of options. Hence, I would propose that we rather support Honorable Pardo, that we should conclude and so that we at least have one position when we arrive at the position that you're talking to. Yeah. The move and second, that then the records of objection obviously would be captured if there are any. Yeah, but I think the parties do agree on the process that we have outlined with regard to option one. Maybe we should move that point and then follow it with the overall motions that Honorable Ndabe has. Thank you, Chair. If I missed the point, my apologies, Chair. But I was trying to help on this point raised by Honorable Pat. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Pado, Honorable Dana, Honorable Begram are disagreeing with one and two. Honorable Pado and Honorable Begram initially, and Honorable Dana at some point initially, had a position that must be respected. It's at the time then when we then said members must submit their lengthy reformulation of 43, when Honorable Gainer requested if they would be allowed, said yes, they will be allowed, they must do that. Now they are still not in agreement. I don't understand the consolidation of what both there are two views from the committee, from two. There's one view, and there is another view. Now we will then. There is nothing wrong with that. That is why I'm saying we will still argue. We are still going to argue. Members are still going to argue why they opted for this because of ABCD. Why the DA thinks that and plus is still that this is the option. Can you go back to options? Can you I don't know who's opening this. Can you go down, Mr. Sakas? I want to go to those options. Okay. So, Honorable Dana and Honorable Bakram said he still feels that clause that must be scrapped. But his fallback position is option 3. And there's nothing that for now. That's why I'm saying we are not yet done. We still have an opportunity that we are still going to argue when we have tabled. When then the Freedom Front Plus, the DA or whatever, or the ANC will say we are not in agreement. The reason that we are not supporting this bill is because clause 43, section 73, is going to do ABCD. The House will be listening. So that's why I'm saying I really don't understand why is it in this clause. Why is it that we must just, because of this clause, everything now must be at a standstill? Because we're not yet done. We are not yet done.
So, Chair, are you suggesting that the committee is going to meet again to finally decide on what Clause 43 looks like? Because it's not as if these three different options are going to be incorporated into a revised bill that comes before the House when it's read for the parties to debate on. I mean, there must be one clear, crystallized position. The different parties aren't going to talk to three different options when the bill comes before the House. So are you saying that the committee is going to meet again subsequent to this meeting to finalise the way forward on Clause 43? That is my core question.
Do you want, Honourable Nontale? Because I want to ask a question. Honourable Nontale, I thought you wanted to speak.
I made a qualification on my proposal, Chair. That if I'm wrong, Chair, I apologize and I withdraw my suggestion. Yes, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nonsen. Honorable Kajo.
Yes, Chair.
Don't make things difficult for us. You understand? If there has been in fact, that's why the Honorable Mdabe said he's supporting the A-list with the amendments. And the amendments that have been, obviously, the amendments is that it's going to take into account all the things that have been raised by the department and what then members have agreed upon. You have got a view, you have got a position. Now why do you think that we are going to come back? Because we're not yet done. Can the parliamentary and the state law advisor,
Assist me here.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. This is Nati, the Parliamentary Legal Advisor. So the process we are engaged in as a committee today, Chairperson, is a list of amendments, what the committee would like to see being amended from the bill as introduced. So we went through all of the amendments and the committee accepted all of the amendments except for making a decision as to what should happen with the three options we presented to the committee. There has been a discussion, Chairperson, about which way the members would prefer to go, but we still don't have a firm decision as a final word from the committee on what we should do with the three options when we present the B version, which is the bill as introduced, incorporating all of the amendments which have been agreed today. So in relation to that clause 43, Chairman, there just needs to be on our side to assist us as drafters a firm decision from the committee on how we are to implement the decision of the committee in the B version when we bring it before the committee. So there is a need, Chairperson, for a discussion to give us a final recommendation for amendment from the committee regarding the clause 43. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Ms. Williams?
Thanks, Chair. I agree with my colleague. In order for us to draft, the committee will have to vote on the A list. So in order for the committee to vote on the A list as to those proposed amendments, then they need to have settled whatever proposed amendments that they are in agreement with. So to provide for that, we need clarity as to what a confirmed option would be for the proposed amendment to Clause 47.
Clause 43.
Yeah, Clause 43,
Chair. Okay. As all members, there is advice from the legal any taker?
This is from Dave, Chair.
Honourable Dave, who else?
Carter.
Honourable Kado.
Mkondo.
Honourable Mkondo.
Nonsele.
Honourable Nonsele.
Dine.
Honourable... It's Honourable Mdabe, Honourable Kado, Honourable Mkondo, Honourable Nonsele, and Honourable Dine. There is somebody's mic that is on. Can that person please switch off his or her mic because he is disturbing? Honourable Ndabe?
Thank you, Chair. On clause 43, we move with the option one that reads that no third party will be allowed, and with what has been agreed to by the presentation by Honorable Nonsele. So that's what we need, therefore, them to put as an amendment of Clause 43. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kado.
Thanks, Chair. I would just like to underscore the point that I think we should actually do away with Clause 43. These three options are, strictly speaking, necessary. I think we should give a clear direction to the Department that we don't need this in the amendment bill, that we should do away with it. And I would also just like to point out that there is a huge danger in kicking everything into touch by saying, oh, well, we'll leave it to the Minister to decide and give the Minister regulatory authority. Despite what's been said about the checks and safeguards that reside in us as legislators to take issue with those regulations, we know in fact that this is actually an abrogation of our responsibility if we were to give all this regulatory power to the Minister. So bottom line, from my point of view, let's do away with Clause 43. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mkondo.
I second that we go with option one, Chair, provided what is in option two will be in the regulations, and the regulations will be brought before the committee for consideration. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Nonsana.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members and the Honorable Deputy Minister and the guests. Honorable Chair, my point is covered, and I fully support Honorable Ndabe and the points raised by Honorable Nkondo. I would save your time on that. Yeah, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nonsana. Honorable Dana.
Thank you, Chair. If we do not do away with Clause 43, I reiterate my support for Option 3, because what does the Department want? It wants regulation. Option 3 would give that. What does the Department not want? An additional administrative burden. And Option 3 would give that. Thank you, Chair.
Can we repeat?
Does I repeat the entire thing or just...
No, I want there's an area there where I couldn't just pick you up.
Chair, I said if we do not do away with Clause 43, I reiterate my support for Option 3, because what does the Department want? It wants regulation of third parties. Option 3 would do that. What does it not want? It does not want an additional administrative burden for the compensation fund, and Option 3 would see to that as well.
So you are still sticking with Option 3?
If we do not do away with the entire Clause 43, yes.
Okay. So that is the situation. We are then having two views in this A list. Is it allowed? Ms. Williams, Ms. Njengani?
No, Chairperson, we need one version, Chairperson, is necessary.
One version?
Yes.
So are you saying that we then...
The vote? Chairperson would assist the members to make a decision where there was no consensus on the deliberation, on which of the options the committee requires us to.
Can I then put to the committee which option? Those that are saying option one, could they indicate?
Nonetheless, I support option one with amendment as moved by Honorable Ndabe and the Honorable Nkondo.
Honorable Nonsele.
Honorable Ngabane, I'm for option one.
Honorable Ngabane.
Nkondo, Chair.
Honorable Nkondo.
Sibusiso Ndabe.
Honorable Ndabe.
Sibusiso Ndabe for option one, Chair.
Yes. Honorable Nonsele, Honorable Nkabane, Honorable Nkondo, Honorable Ndabe. Where are the members?
Honorable Option 1.
Who's that one?
Honorable Zuma, Option 1.
Honorable Zuma. And then for option three?
Dana?
Honourable Dana?
Chair, I will support option three.
Honourable Cardo?
Clause 43 being rejected.
Honourable Inanna, you are an alternate, and therefore when it comes to voting,
Okay,
then it's Honourable Bagram.
Yeah, I'll speak for Inanna, thank you. Option three.
Is there in the role? Is that in the role? No, that's on a lighter note.
That's on a lighter note.
Yes.
But he is my brother, so...
No, that's fine. No, so thank you, Honourable Members. It's in the order. Members for option one, it's Honourable Nontsele, Honourable Ngabane, Honourable Mkhondo, Honourable Ndabe, and Honourable Zuma, which is five. Then it will be Honourable Dana, Honourable Cardo, and Honourable Bagram, which is there for option three. And the first option is then the option that will then be in the A list. Agreed?
Thank you.
I think then can Honourable Ndabe formally move the A list with the amendment that has been made? And corrections and additions. Can I have then a seconder?
I, Honourable Sibusiso Ndabe, formally move for the adoption of the A list with the amendments as they have been presented. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Can we get a seconder? Can we get a seconder?
I, Honourable Mkhonto, second the option one. Thanks, Chair.
The A list.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Can I start afresh, Chair?
Yes.
Honourable Mkhonto, second the adoption of the A list of the COVID bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Come again?
I said, please note the DA's objection.
Okay.
Please note the William Brown's objection, please, Chair.
Thank you. That will be noted. I think we are then now done with
sorry, Chairperson.
Ms. Williams?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just for the purpose of finalizing the A list, I just wanted to clarify the option one is the option as provided for in the A list with no alterations.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Chair.
What's that, Chair, with the amendment?
I think we have then come to the end. What then now we are going to do, a report of the committee will be prepared, and it will then be tabled. I want to thank members for being patient and understanding the issue of the bill of the amendment is not an easy process. We also want to thank the department for being with us from the start up to now, and then I hope they will also be with us when we are with the when we'll then be making our, we'll be debating in the House for this to be adopted. I also want to thank the legal team from both Parliament and the State Law Advisor, because it's really very important that you are with us, as I have said, so that when we err at times, when we need to be assisted, you are able to do that, so that when things fall apart, you are able to say, but we did advise them, because you would then be asked that, why didn't you, when you could pick up that there is an error that is being committed. So I want to thank you very much for that. We will then have another meeting, which will then be a meeting where we then tabling our committee report for it to be then ATC, and we then prepare for our debate. I think now we're done with the agenda item number one. We will then come to agenda number two, the convention, the ratification of the convention, ILO Convention 190, which we still requested the department to come and take us through that. I hope the DM is she still around before we allow whoever, I don't know who is going to do that from the department, whether it will still be Mr. Mkhalipi or whoever is then being delegated to do that. DM, are you still with us?
I'm still here, Honorable Chair. Remember, we as a department, we are presenting this to yourselves for further deliberations and approval of some of these documents. I'm not going to be making any speech, but to give our commitment as a department that we as a department, we have actually dealt with this document itself. If you remember, in line with this legal mandate, we adopted the code of good practice on the handling of sexual harassment in the workplace in 2005, and we acknowledging the requirements of the new ILO Convention 190, and its recommendations itself concerning violence and harassment and shortcomings of the existing code, and in terms of the Commission on Employment Equity. Our department, we have actually commenced with the process to review the code towards the end of 2019-2020 financial year to be in line, obviously, with the Convention 9, ILO Convention 190. So I think without even getting too much into further details, I think it will be appropriate that we allow, I think, Dr. Mkhalipi to present, and or whoever was delegated in the department to make that presentation further. But we are bringing alignment of our national laws with the ILO conventions, and I think the CEE also has developed a new draft code on the prevention and elimination of violence and harassment in the world of work, and I'm sure we had been able even to publicize that previously. So I think we must allow the department to make that presentation without getting into too much detail, Chair. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you very much, DM. I'm not quite sure, Mr. Nontale, Honorable Nontale, is this hand a legacy hand or is it a new hand? Mr. Nontale?
It's an old hand, Chair.
Lower it, please.
Mr. Mkalipi, over to
you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I've got my colleague here, Ulufaki Mamashela, who's registered as Ukakona, will share the presentation, and she will deal with the section starting from the draft code on prevention and elimination of harassment and going forward. I will deal with two sections of this presentation. One is the convention itself. I'll take the members through the convention, what does the convention entail, and then I'll take through the members on the legal framework in the country that incorporate the requirement of the convention, and then she will take over from then. Thank you, Chair. Next slide, please. The convention concerning elimination of violence and harassment in the world of work, that's the outline. We'll deal with the convention. We'll deal with self-help law in sexual harassment, and then we'll deal with advocacy campaigns on violence and harassment, and we'll deal with inspection enforcement measures on violence and harassment between me and my colleague. Thank you. Next slide, please. This convention was adopted by the ILO in 2019, and now, in terms of the ILO processes, the convention must be ratified by a number of countries for it to be operational. And it defines what is violence and harassment in terms of this. And the ILO definition of violence and harassment is that it's a range of unacceptable behavior and practices or threats. Whether those behavioral practices are single or a repeat, because there's always this view by harassers and people who commit violence, though this is my first time I do this, therefore it's not sexual harassment, it's not harassment, or it's not violence. But in terms of the convention is clear that whether it's single or whether it's a repeat occurrence. Its aim of this occurrence results at, or are likely to result at, physical abuse. It could be somebody assaulting you. They could result into psychological. You might not have scars, but it might affect you mentally, and you have psychological scars on that. It might be sexual harassment. It might be economic harm. The actions that are taken are such that you are not able to work. It affects your employment. It and also include, as indicated, gender-based violence and harassment. The convention prescribes that national laws, and members should bear this in mind. This is very important because the convention on its own does not work. Yes, courts take it in consideration even if you have not ratified it. But the convention requires that when the country ratifies the convention, the country must make sure that it provides a single concept or several concepts taken into consideration its national circumstances. Therefore, you've got to make sure that your laws comply with the convention or regulations or any policy that you use to manage the workplace or any other sphere of society in terms of this. Therefore, the convention is implemented in terms of laws of the country. The convention protects workers and other persons in the workplace. It's not only about people who are working. The convention used the terminology, the world of work. And in the convention, employees are defined by national laws. That's what the convention says, that each law must define employees, as well as person working, irrespective of their contractual status. Even if you're an independent contractor, if you're working, just like the national minimum wage defines that is applicable to all workers, not only employees. All other legislation in the labor law front applies to employees, but the convention applies to anybody who works, whether that person is working for an employer, whether that person is working for themselves, whether that person are working in the informal sector. Whether the people are in training, whether the people are interns, whether the people are apprentices, whether the people are no more working, they were working, but then they were terminated. You realize that after dismissal that you were sexually harassed or you were violently harassed, it affected you psychologically, you can still have the case, even if you're still not working in the company. Even if you are a volunteer, even if you are a job seeker or a job applicant, individual exercising authority or responsibility of an employer are covered on this. It applies to all sectors, whether private or public, whether informal or informal economy, urban and rural areas. Next slide, please. The convention applies to violence and harassment in the workplace, in the world of work, not in the workplace, in the world of work, occurring in the course of or linked with or arising out of any work. In the workplace, including public, private sector, as we have said, where they are a workplace, in places where workers are paid or take rest. We know people who stay in the urban areas, you see domestic workers sitting in the park, resting during their break. If they are harassed in that park, whether it be by the employer or by anybody that they can identify, if they can take up a case on that. Or they are having meals in their canteen, workers in their canteen who goes into the canteen, or whether they are in the gyms using sanitary places, washing and changing facilities. If they are harassed there, irrespective of the fact that they are no more inside the workplace, if they are taking trips, know that in the public service, before the COVID-19, we used to take many trips to Cape Town. If during those trips to Cape Town from Pretoria, people are harassed and sexually harassed, they can put a case in. The fact that they are not in the office should not make any difference. They are traveling, they are training, events on events or social activity. Through work-related communication, somebody can send information through WhatsApp, through emails, through SMS using technology, harassing and acting violently against other people. Or in employer-provided accommodation, if your employer provides accommodation and you are harassed, you are at home, you are harassed there. It could be by the employer, it could be by a supervisor. Or when community from home to work in a transport that is provided by the employer, you are harassed. Or even if it's not provided by the employer, you're harassed and sexually harassed, then there should be remedies. That's what the convention says. Next slide, please. And as I've indicated, the convention requires that each member must adopt laws and regulations to define and prohibit violence and harassment, including gender-based violence and harassment. Each member state must take appropriate measures to prevent violence and harassment. Each member state must recognize the important role of the public authority in the case of informal economy workers. Informal economy workers also must be affected. Yes, the people that are selling fruit and veggies and meat in the street, if they are harassed, violence is committed against them, there should be avenues for them to be able to take up those kind of cases. Identifying in consultation with employers and workers through other means or sector occupation or work arrangement in which workers and other persons are exposed to violence and harassment. The kind of discussions that are taking place in NECLEC and other institutions. Next slide, please. Take measures to eliminate this. And each member state shall take appropriate measures to monitor and enforce national laws. As I've indicated, members, that convention on its own is not enforced and monitored. What the convention does, the national laws must embody the convention, and then you must enforce and monitor your national laws and your regulation. Ensure easy access to appropriate and effective remedies, such as complain. People must know where to complain if they are being violently or sexually harassed, and who does investigation at the workplace level, and dispute resolution mechanism external to the workplace. What happens when, as I've said, a hawker who's selling fruit is being harassed? What are they supposed to do? Which courts deal with this, or tribunals, if there are tribunals like the CCMA and others? Protection against victimization or retaliation against complaints. It's got to be clear where are these measures, how are they going to be taken. Legal, social, and medical and administrative support that are given to people who have been violently harassed, and psychological support that is given to them other than just the court cases themselves. What support can the companies and the state give? Next slide, please. Each member state shall seek to ensure that violence and harassment is addressed in relevant national policy. Therefore, it means that our laws must embody the convention. Employers and workers and their organization and relevant authority must provide guidance on training or other tools to ensure accessibility to format on violence and harassment in the workplace or in the world of work, to ensure that this is eliminated, and must make sure that their initiatives, including awareness and raising campaigns, are undertaken to make people aware of the policies, the laws, and that govern this area, and that embodied the convention. Next slide, please. Now, I've dealt with what the convention says. As I've indicated, members, that in order for the convention to be ratified, our laws must embody the convention. Now, I'm going to draw through what laws exist in the country that take into consideration the issues raised in the convention, as the convention requires that national governments and member states must have policies and regulations and laws that embody the convention. Now, these the existing laws in the country. First one, the first important one, is the constitution. Our constitution is clear in this country that everyone is equal before the law and has the right to equal protection and benefit to the law. That's section 9(1) of the constitution. Section 9(3) makes it clear that the state may not unfairly discriminate directly or indirectly against anyone on race, gender, sex, mature status, ethnic, social origin, color, social orientation, age, disability, religion, conscious belief, and all of that. And section 9(4) goes further and says no one other than even the state can do the things that the state is not allowed to do. Therefore, the fact that 9(3) says the state, that does not exclude, in terms of the constitution, a private organization also not to do the same thing, because 9(4) of the constitution talked to that. Section 23(1) of the constitution provides that everyone has the right to fair labor practice, and this has been interpreted by our courts to include the rights of employees to be protected from harassment and violence at work. Next slide, please. Now, laws on the elimination of violence and harassment in broader society in our country include promotion of equity or equality and prevention of unfair discrimination, PEPUDA, harassment on prohibited grounds, which does not arise out of employment policy practices, is prohibited by PEPUDA. Therefore, what it means is that any harassment and discrimination that takes place against a hawker who's selling food, they are not workers, what oven you can they use? There's PEPUDA. It applies to everybody outside the working environment. When the Employment Equity Act deals with the working environment, PEPUDA will deal with the society at large. It will include everybody who's not part of the labor force. It will include independent contractors or anybody else. It includes even members of parliament. They'll be affected if members of parliament believe, for whatever reason, that from the same party, some members of the party are harassing them. They can, and if the party is not taking anything about that, it can be held liable in terms of the PEPUDA, in terms of these issues. The same would apply to trade unions. If members of trade unions, office bearers of trade unions, are being harassed by other trade union members, they can use the PEPUDA. And lastly, with trade unions, they are also employees. They can use Employment Equity Act in terms of this. The issue of Protective Disclosure Act, when acts of harassment against an employee is made, the protected disclosure whistleblowing are prohibited. Therefore, you cannot be harassed because you've made this whistleblowing. And this occurs when an employee is subjected to an occupational detriment because of the disclosure that they've made in the company. And the protection from harassment, the act enable individuals who are subject to harassment act, who are subjected to harassment as defined in the act, to obtain protection order, including interim protection order. The act covers harassment in all spheres of life, including workplace, the protection from harassment act. And the Domestic Violence Act, it provides protection against any form of domestic violence as well. These are kind of legislation that are already in operation in the country that embodied the values and the programs that the convention require member states to have. Next slide, please. The Employment Equity Act, as we'll talk about, is one of those acts. They are and the provision that are in the act that are relevant to the implementation of such an obligation in terms of Section 190 to prevent violence and harassment in the Act. Section 5 of the Employment Equity Act requires employers to take steps to promote equal opportunity in the workplace by eliminating unfair discrimination in any employment policy and practice. Section 6.1 of the Act says no person may unfairly discriminate directly or indirectly against employees in any employment policy or practice in one or more grounds, including race, and then the Act lists all of those grounds that you can't do. It even goes further now. It got on any other arbitrary ground. If it's not one of those listed, it could be then another ground that is not listed. 6.3 goes further and indicates that harassment of an employee is a form of unfair discrimination and is prohibited on any one or combination of the grounds that are listed above. Next slide, please. Now, we as part of this process, develop a code of good practice on employment equity, which deals with sexual harassment, and is defined as unwelcome conduct on a sexual nature that violates the rights of employees and constitutes a barrier to equity in the workplace, taking into account all of the following factors. The code, the issue of harassment is unwanted, solicited attention based on one of the factors. Now, whether the harassment is on prohibited grounds of sex, gender, sexual orientation, whether the sexual harassment conducted was unwelcome, the nature and extent of the sexual conduct, and the impact of sexual conduct on the employee. And the code goes further on that. But colleagues, I think that now my colleague, Ntswaki Mamashela, can take over to finalize the whole other slides, because she's more an expert on this area than me. Ntswaki?
Chair, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Minister, our acting DG, our DDG, Mr. Mukanipi, and other colleagues and honorable guests that are attending this meeting. Thank you very much. In this slide, Chairperson, we also outline other labor laws that actually cover issues of violence and harassment. You'll notice that in the Labor Relations Act, harassment of employees may also give rise to issues that are regulated in the LRA. In particular, employers are required by the LRA to ensure that persons who engage in harassment, including violence, are subject to discipline. And in accordance with the LRA, there is an existing code of good practice that deals with unfair dismissals and is inclusive of violence and harassment, that violence and harassment constitutes misconduct and is also subjected to the code of good practice on unfair dismissal. And the LRA also outlines that harassment may also constitute an unfair labor practice in terms of Section 186(2) of the Labor Relations Act. Again, in our labor laws that are administered by the department, we also deal with the Occupational Health and Safety Act of 1993. In this act, in the OSHA Act, it is prescribed that when an employee duties are of such a nature that they are exposed to a significant risk of violence while at work, the employer must take the necessary steps, as may be reasonably practicable, to eliminate or mitigate this hazard. What it means is that violence and harassment is an occupational health and safety hazard, and therefore, in terms of the OSHA Act, the employers have a legal obligation to eliminate and mitigate this hazard. And further, the employer must institute measures consistent with the OSHA to ensure that employees are protected against harassment and violence. And therefore, honorable members, it is clear that South Africa is very advanced in terms of labor laws in complying with the new developed ILO convention. Next slide. In terms of the revised code of good practice that has been issued under the Employment Equity Act, the Commission for Employment Equity, together with our Minister of Employment and Labor, published a draft code of good practice on the prevention and elimination of violence and harassment in the workplace on the 20th of August 2020. And this, after considering all the public comments, a revised code of good practice was developed and then tabled in NEDLAC on the 30th of March 2021. And this revised code of good practice is in the NEDLAC Labour Market Chamber Task Team and is undergoing deliberations. It is important that we highlight, before I get into the objectives of this draft code, Honourable Chair and members, that in the initial draft code that was published on the 20th of August 2020, the Commission and together with the Department were very ambitious to cover both the violence and harassment in one code under the Employment Equity Act. However, upon consideration of about 70 written public comments and the legal advice that we got from our legal drafters, it became evident that we cannot cover both violence and harassment under the Employment Equity Act, and we cannot also extend the scope of the Employment Equity Act beyond the workplace. Because in the initial draft code that was published for public comments in August, we had actually treated violence and harassment as a single concept. And we have been advised legally that because the Employment Equity Act covers is strictly limited to the workplace and not the world of work, we should limit our revised code to the jurisdiction of the Employment Equity Act. And because violence is also covered in other labor laws like the Labor Relations Act and the Occupational Health and Safety. We cannot actually bring it under the Employment Equity Act. Therefore, the objectives of this revised code that we are engaging on at NetLeg is intended to eliminate the harassment of employees in the workplace while working or engaged in the work-related activities. You will see that we are limiting it to harassment because Section 6.3 of the Employment Equity Act gives us jurisdiction to deal with issues of harassment only and not extend it beyond what the scope of the EA is. And again, the intention of this code is to provide guidelines to both the employers and employees on how to prevent and eliminate harassment as a form of unfair discrimination in their workplaces. And again, with this code, we intend providing guidelines to all organizations when they develop their human resource policies, procedures, and practices to ensure that harassment should not occur in their workplaces and is covered by all their HR policies. And furthermore, this code is intended to encourage and promote the development and implementation of policies, practices, and procedures that will lead to a creation of workplaces that are free from harassment. In the next slide, we are then covering the application of this code so that we comply with the ILO Convention. You will see that in this application of this draft code, we cover exactly what is, has been outlined by Mr. Mokalipi under the ILO Convention 190. This code will therefore be limited to the working environment. However, we are also conceding that there are perpetrators and victims of harassment which may not necessarily be directly involved in the workplace. And the last bullet recognizes that clients, suppliers, and contractors can also be impacted by harassment when they interact with our organizations or our workplaces. Therefore, we want to extend coverage to the suppliers, clients, customers, and contractors that interact with our workplaces. And again, the last bullet refers to others having dealings with a business. And in this last bullet, this is inclusive of volunteers, because in our workplaces, we find people that are volunteers working and not being paid. However, they interact with the workplace and they may be harassed or and violated while they are rendering their services in our organization. In the next slide, we're covering the legal framework. I'm not going to repeat, Chairperson, with your indulgence, the legal framework, because Mr. Felipe has already touched on this legal framework. Can we move the slide to the legal framework, please? Thank you. It highlights clearly the ILO Convention. It also explains that the EEA is one of the several statutes that give effect to our South Africa's obligations to the ILO in terms of Convention 190. And if we finalize this draft code, Chairperson, this code will then replace the existing Code of Good Practice on the handling of sexual harassment cases in the workplace, which was published in August 2005. Therefore, we left in this code a one comprehensive code of good practice that deals with all forms of harassment, inclusive of the sexual harassment case, meaning that it will repeal the existing sexual harassment code of 2005. Next slide. These are the provisions of the EA, which gives us the mandate to develop this code of good practice that deals with harassment of employees as a form of unfair discrimination, which is prohibited on all the grounds that are listed in Section 6.1 of the Employment Equity Act. And Mr. Mokalipi has alluded to all these grounds that were revised in the amendments of Employment Equity Act in 2013. Now I'll quickly move to the substantive issues that I have covered in this call. You will see that in terms of the substantive issues, in the first slide after this one, the court gives a very comprehensive definition of harassment. That harassment, although it's not defined in the Employment Equity Act, we want to define it in this court so that it is taken into account by the CCMA commissioners and the labor court when they deal with cases of harassment. And we are defining harassment as an unwanted conduct which may be persistent or serious and also creates a hostile or intimidating work environment for one or more employees. And again, we explained that it's related to one or more grounds of discrimination as outlined in Section 6.1 of the Employment Equity Act. We go on the next slide to explain that harassment may include violence, physical abuse, psychological abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, and racial abuse. And again, it involves the use of physical force or power. And you'll see, honorable members, that for the first time, if you look at existing codes of good practice, the harassment terminology was never defined at this length, and we believe that in this code, we are covering it comprehensively to provide the necessary guidance that is required in the workplace. We also recognize in this code that harassment particularly affects employees in vulnerable employment. While covered by all labor legislation, these employees may have, in practice, poor access to the exercise of labor rights, such as freedom of association, collective bargaining, decent work, protection from discriminatory practices, and access to dispute resolution mechanisms. And here on the last bullet, I want to make an example of people that work in privately owned premises or households. We may make an example with our farm workers. They work in privately owned farms and they are isolated from accessing other labor rights or organizing themselves to exercise their freedom of association. And we all know that in the agricultural sector, there is poor collective bargaining and decent work in some instances. And also our domestic workers find themselves in a vulnerable employment situation because they work in our privately owned households and they may not have access to trade unions or also be able to complain about their discriminatory practices that they are faced with. And we believe that this code is actually providing the necessary protection to those employees in the vulnerable situation. Furthermore, the code in the next slide outlines what is unwanted conduct, and it actually highlights Chairperson that the primary issues may arise when we deal with unwanted conduct, and this may have occurred verbally or non-verbally and may have been communicated directly or indirectly to the harasser or perpetrator. We are all aware that at times when people make advances or harass you and you may not necessarily react immediately as a victim. However, we believe that all forms of harassment, whether verbally or non-verbally, should be protected. And if there is no such communication, if you don't respond immediately as a victim that the conduct is unwanted, the perpetrator should know or should have known that such conduct engaged in is generally considered to be unwelcome and it may constitute a form of harassment. And we believe that violent conduct may amount to harassment and harassment may occur as a result of non-violent conduct as well. And such acts or threat of violence is not an essential element of harassment. As long as the conduct is unwelcome, whether it's communicated or not, whether it's of a violent nature or not, if it impairs the dignity of the victim, then it's an unwanted conduct. In the next slide, I'm not going to go through it in detail, but we are explaining in the court that the incidents of harassment may occur as a result of a pattern of persistent conduct or a single instance or event. Therefore, it's important that in this court we explain that when dealing with issues of harassment, we should assess each incident on its merit on an objective basis from the perspective of the employee who alleges harassment. Because it's important, Chairperson, that we are objective when dealing with harassment, because if it hasn't happened to you, you may not necessarily understand what the victim has went through, because it may have, the conduct may have impacted negatively on the employee. And when a reasonable person looks at it, they should actually be objective from the perspective of the victim so that they can deal with it accordingly. The code also goes further in the next slide, Chairperson, to outline what is meant by repeated or serious conduct, and it also refers to areas that must be taken into account, especially the last bullet deals with factors that may be relevant to the issue of whether harassment has occurred or not. So it's important if you're an employer or a trade union that is carrying out a complaint on behalf of workers to understand the context of the harassment, the circumstances of the complainant, and the respective positions of the harasser, perpetrator, and the complainant, because we all know in most cases harassment has to do with power relations. Normally employees are being harassed by people that are superior to them because they want to exercise power to bully or harass incumbents that report to them. In the next slide, Chair, we deal with the hostile work environment, and we are trying for the first time in this call to explain what we mean with hostile work environment. And we are highlighting that the hostile environment will be present where the conduct related to a prohibited spouse impacts on the dignity of one or more employees. I have alluded to this fact that only the victim or the employee that has been harassed will know the impact of the harassment incident. If it has impacted negatively on their dignity, then it should be dealt with accordingly. And this may be the result of conduct of persons in authority such as managers. I've already alluded to the fact that it has to do with power relations. And again, we are trying to make sure that employers are able to look with to deal with direct or indirect harassment as long as the complainant has brought it forward. And in the last bullet, we are actually explaining that harassment is considered to be direct where it is aimed at the complainant, and we are giving an example that this may be a violent conduct or abusive language. And when it's indirectly, it's when it's not directed at the complainant. However, the effect of undermining dignity or threatening safety of employees may be a problem in this instance, because we know people like throwing general statements, not directing it to you, but however, it may undermine your dignity and make the working environment very hostile for employees. Furthermore, in the next slide, this code then explains the different types of harassment that may occur in the workplace, Chairperson. And we believe that for the first time, we are providing coverage to all employees, whether they've been covered in the Constitution or by Section 6(1) of the Employment Equity. We feel that all employees need protection. And we actually explain in this code that harassment may manifest itself whether physically, verbally, or psychological conduct. And we actually unpack what is physical harassment, referring it to physical attack or simulated or certain violence. And again, we are covering an area that is a new phenomenon that is emerging in the workplace that deals with bullying. And in this code, we are explaining that verbal bullying may include threats, shaming, hostile teasing, insults, and negative judgment or criticism. And in this code, we are also extending coverage to LGBTIQA+ community, that at times this group of people or employees are always facing bullying based on their sexual orientation. And we also outline the psychological harassment, and we believe that we have actually explained all types of harassment. In the next slide, we continue to actually with the different types of harassment that are being protected, and I've already alluded to the bullying. And again, we believe that in the second bullet, that harassment should be looked at as a tangible or material issue. And when we talk about tangible or material issue, we are referring to formal power, where people exercise their positions or their titles to actually harass other employees, or as a material leverage, where people withhold resources or information in the workplace as a form of intimidation or harassment, so that they can exercise their dominance of control over the complainants. And again, in terms of passive aggressive or covert harassment, people throw negative gossips about other employees, and we believe that such acts of harassment must be prohibited. And also issues that may actually create a hostile environment where you are professionally isolated because you don't confirm to the power relations that are at play at workplaces, that it should be seen as part of the covert harassment and should be protected under this code. In the next slide, honorable members, we are also covering new phenomena that are emerging in workplaces which have never been covered in other laws, labor laws. Issues of mobbing. We know that people work remotely again nowadays because of the pandemic. We are covering online harassment. We believe that people who use mobile phones and smartphones and internet or social media to bully other people in relation to their work or when they carry out work activities, and this should be prohibited in terms of the Employment Equity Act and this code. And we further explain the issue of arbitrary ground, that at times harassment may not necessarily be linked to the prohibited grounds, it may be on an arbitrary ground as well. Chair, we then in this code unpack the different types of harassment that we have alluded to in the prior slide. We then unpack sexual harassment, and in the case of sexual harassment, we have also mentioned earlier on that sexual harassment has always been regulated by an existing code of good practice that was published in August 2005. What we did here, we actually took the same code of sexual harassment and included it in this comprehensive code to make sure that we don't lose the essence of sexual harassment. In this code, Chair, I'm not going to read the slides line by line, is that we are explaining again that there are different factors that need to be established when you deal with sexual harassment cases. And in the next slide, we also outline the nature and extent of the conduct that people that deal with sexual harassment cases should take into account. We outline the physical conduct that is of sexual nature, ranging from touching or sexual assault and rape, and we actually explain it further what physical conduct may constitute And again, in the last bullet, we outlined the verbal conduct, such as suggestions or sexual advances, that also constitutes sexual harassment. And in most cases, because people work remotely, you'll find that some people that are harassing you, they will send you graphic comments about a person's body or pornography, and that should actually be seen as sexual harassment in terms of verbal conduct. In the next slide, Chairperson, we actually outline the different forms of sexual harassment, and we believe that these are existing in workplaces where sexual harassment may include victimization and quid pro quo. And in this quote, we are actually explaining what is victimization of employees. Victimization occurs when an employee is victimized or intimidated for failing to submit to sexual advances. If someone makes sexual advances and you refuse, we are all aware of this, then you become a victim, and every time you are being victimized by those people that were harassing you or the perpetrator. And the most common sexual harassment incidents that take place is the quid pro quo. For example, when employees are being harassed, or they should actually succumb to sexual harassment so that they can get favors for promotion or training and also salary increments. And should you refuse to surrender to sexual advances, then you may not necessarily get promotion or get a training opportunity. Another one, we see that sexual favoritism is the same as a form of quid pro quo. And we believe that this kind of harassment, sexual harassment, should actually be prohibited and protected by the law. And we also outlined that it doesn't matter if the sexual harassment incident was a single incident or a repeated incident, it should be seen as an unwelcome conduct that needs to be dealt with in the workplace. Honorable members, I alluded earlier on in the next slide that we try to make sure that we make it easier for everyone, including the trade unions, to deal with incidents of sexual harassment. And you will see that in this code, we actually give more guidelines in terms of the test for sexual harassment that needs to be applied when dealing with cases of sexual harassment. And we believe that this will assist not only the employees, but also the third parties that actually take cases of sexual harassment to the CCMA to be able to test if such cases are indeed sexual harassment before they can lay any complaints internally through their grievances, or if they want to take it to the CCMA or the Labour Court. The next slide, please. The next slide is the first introduction of protection, honorable members, on racial, ethnic, or social origin harassment. In the previous code that we had, we have never dealt with racial harassment, and we believe that more and more in our workplaces, we find complaints from employees regarding racist conduct that is happening in our workplaces, and we believe that this should be covered under our labor laws for protection. We outline in this code that racist conduct may include derogatory language. And we believe that it's important that we actually give effect to the founding principles of our constitution, in particular the values of non-racialism, dignity, and equality. And this provision of the code will actually give effect to those principles of the Constitution. We further outline that racial harassment may be direct or indirect behavior, and it can also be verbal or non-verbal conduct in relation to abusive language, racist name-calling, offensive behavior gestures, and racist cartoons that may be circulated via social media and so forth. And in terms of verbal or non-verbal, racial harassment takes place in terms of racial innuendo, stereotyping, and other types of racial conduct. You'll find that in some instances, people give and make jokes about, you know, I'm giving an example here that, you know, black people don't go to school. They are generalizing, but if you actually read into the jokes that they are making, it's actually a racial stereotyping that certain types of population group don't actually go to school. I'm just making an example, Honorable Jefferson. In the next slide, we are dealing with other forms of racial harassment, the abusive language I've alluded to, and offensive behavior, sudden and blatant exclusion from workplace interactions and activities. At times when we did a DJ reviews, Chairperson, we came across practices in the workplace where employees were complaining that there will be after hour social activities in workplaces. However, when you go to those after hour social activities, you will find that the language or the games that are being played or in, the interactions are surrounding certain types of sports which are actually racially excluding other population groups. If people watch only rugby and when you bring issues of soccer on the table, they actually look at you in such a way like, oh, you are backward or something like that. And it's actually a form of racial harassment. I'm just making an example there. So some other population groups may feel racially harassed by the subtle or blunted exclusion from workplace interactions. In the next slide, Chair, we are also covering factors to be considered when you deal with sexual harassment. And I'm not going to read all this because I think the presentation was already circulated. And we are also in this code covering the different tests that must be applied when dealing with racial harassment. Chair, I'm going to move to procedural issues that are covered in this code, if you allow me. Next slide. This code, Chair, outlines the guiding principles on the prevention, elimination and management of harassment in the workplace. And it actually outlines the legal obligations that employers already have in terms of Section 60 of the Employment Equity Act, that the law already requires employers to take proactive and remedial steps to prevent all forms of harassment in the workplace. Therefore, we are actually fully compliant in terms of Section 60 of the Act to deal with the provisions of the ILO Convention. And we believe that in this Act, in this code, we should still outline the legal obligations of employers in terms of Section 60. In the next slide, Chairperson, under procedural procedures, it is an obligation, a legal obligation that employers should adopt harassment policies in their workplaces so that they prevent and eliminate all forms of harassment. It's already in the Act in terms of Section 60 that they need to eliminate all forms of unfair discrimination. And in this code, we go further to provide guidelines on what should be included in the harassment policies in the workplace. And all these policies should comply with the provisions of Section 62 of the Employment Equity Act. The code further, if we go to the next slide, colleague, the code also reminds employers that as part of their harassment policies, they should outline in those policies the appropriate actions that will be taken by employers should employees complain about
harassment, any form of harassment. And the policies should also outline the disciplinary offense to victimize or retaliate against an employee who has lodged a grievance about harassment. We all know at times that when employees lodge grievances, then the disciplinary actions are not clear and how the matters will be dealt. And this should be included in the harassment policies. And also the procedures to be followed, including the assistance that employers will provide in terms of counseling, treatment, care and support programs for employees that have been harassed in the workplace. All these things must be included in the policies that needs to be developed and adopted in workplaces. Again, in terms of the guiding principles and guidelines, we go further in this code to give employers different guidelines in relation to how they should deal with reporting mechanisms in relation to harassment. And we believe that this will assist all employers and trade unions and employees to know how to report incidents of harassment in line with Section 61 of the Employment Equity Act. And also, we have looked at recent cases, Chairperson, that the Labour Appeal Court has already ruled that immediately means that it must be interpreted in light of the purpose of the provision, that even if the incidents of harassment are not reported immediately after it takes place, this should not be interpreted to be a technical issue, but even if it's reported after a day or so, it should still be regarded as immediate. And again, we have covered the fact that the allegations of harassment may be brought forward to the employer by a friend, a colleague, or a human resource official acting on the request of the complainant. It does not necessarily mean it should be the victim that lodges the complaint. The code also re-emphasized the obligations of the employer that they need to consult all relevant parties and they need to address the complaint as soon as possible and take the necessary steps to eliminate this. And also, the code also gives further guidelines in relation to the steps that need to be taken by employers when they receive any complaints of harassment. The following slide also deals with on the advice that and assistance that the employers need to give to the victims or employees that have been harassed. And it refers also to the obligations that the employers need to take in terms of providing assistance and counseling, and the fact that they need to treat the complaints confidentially so that it's not spread throughout the workplace. It all further explains that not everyone in the employment of the employer can deal with cases of harassment, because these harassment cases require a person that has appropriate skills and experience, including counseling and labor relations skills. And these people should be provided with proper training and adequate resources. And this is inclusive of trade union representatives or shop stewards that work in our organizations. In the next slide, Chair, I'm not going to read all the slides. It outlines the different procedures, whether formal or informal, that needs to be followed by employers when dealing with issues of harassment. Can we move, colleague, to the slide that deals with confidentiality? Chair, in this court, we believe that we have given enough guidelines to employers, and we wanted to also emphasize the fact that issues of harassment are sensitive. Therefore, employers and employees must ensure that grievances
are investigated and handled in a manner that ensures that identities of the persons involved are kept confidential unless a written consent has been obtained from the victims of harassment, because people may be labeled and victimized should their identities be shared or spread through social media or emails at the workplace. And this may also impact negatively on their dignity and their performance at work. Hence, this clause is very important in relation to harassment cases. And we believe that the employers are required to disclose to complainant and the perpetrator or their respective representatives such information as may be reasonably necessary. They cannot just disclose all the information that may impact negatively on the dignity of the complainants or the victims. And the other important clause, Chair, that we have put in this code deals with additional sick leave. The next slide, please. In the next slide, we found that in most cases, because the impact of sexual harassment incidents may have long-term effects on the victim, when they are only allocated 36 paid sick leave in 3-year cycle, Chairperson, they may not necessarily have enough sick leave to deal with trauma counseling and other effects that may happen after the incident of harassment has taken place. And in this code, we are actually requiring that employees should be entitled to additional paid sick leave in cases of serious harassment. And we make an example of trauma counseling or when they require medical advice. And we also outline in this slide, in the code, Chair, that employees, if they've been ill for longer than 2 weeks, then those employees may be entitled to claim illness benefits under the Unemployment Insurance Act of 2001. And we believe that this provides proper protection and coverage to the victims of harassment. And we think that in appropriate circumstances, employers should also consider providing assistance in relation to cost of medical advice and trauma counseling and care. This is in relation to people that may not necessarily be covered by medical aid, or medical aid benefits may have been exhausted. And we believe that this will be good for employers to assist in terms of medical costs that are required if a person has been harassed. Lastly, on this code, Chairperson, we are also requiring or compelling employers and employer organizations to include issues of sexual harassment and other types of harassment in their orientation programs, education and training programs to ensure that all the contents of the code and their harassment policies are well known, and everybody in their organizations must be trained how to deal with cases of harassment. And in the same vein, the code requires trade unions to include in their education and training programs for shop stewards and employees issues of sexual harassment in particular and other types of harassment that have been outlined in this code. And this should be in accessible format so that we accommodate persons with disabilities that work in our workplaces. Lastly, honorable members, the code requires that all CCMA commissioners and labor court judges that deal with cases of harassment should receive specialized training to deal with harassment cases. Currently, Chairperson, I can confirm that at the CCMA, we have specialized commissioners that deal with all disputes of unfair discrimination to ensure that they have the appropriate skills
and knowledge how to interpret the law and also how to provide the necessary remedies should complainants come to the CCMA to on issues of harassment and other unfair discrimination cases. The only challenge may be the labor court judges, but that is an area that the department together with the CCMA may want to explore how we do joint training programs to assist labor court judges when dealing with unfair discrimination cases, in particular harassment cases. The last slide actually responds to additional questions that were raised in the email that came from the portfolio committee. I'm about to conclude, honorable members. We are required to actually outline the advocacy campaigns that the department has undertaken in relation to violence and harassment. In this slide, Chairperson, we want to assure honorable members that on an annual basis, we conduct national advocacy campaigns in all 9 provinces. And in October 2019, we had joint campaigns with the CCMA, where we actually publicized the newly adopted ILO Convention 190 regarding violence and harassment, and the CCMA actually shared cases of sexual harassment that have been reported and handled by the CCMA. This was a very successful campaign that were conducted in all 9 provinces together with the CCMA. And in August and September 2020, Chair, because of COVID, we continue to conduct visual workshops with employers, trade unions, employees, academics, and other civil society members to share the draft code on the prevention of and elimination of harassment in the workplace. And this was to sensitize all our stakeholders and other interested parties about the contents of the ILO Convention and what the department is doing to address the provisions of the ILO Convention and to deal with the scourge of harassment in our workplaces. In relation to inspections and enforcement measures, honorable members, the employment equity is very clear in terms of jurisdiction between the labor inspectors and the CCMA commissioners and the labor courts. In terms of issues of unfair discrimination matters, labor inspectors have powers to advocate and raise awareness in relation to issues of violence and harassment. However, they have no jurisdiction to issue undertakings or enforcement or compliance orders to force employers to do certain issues that deal with unfair discrimination. However, they can actually assist employers to interpret the law and also assist employers to understand what is required of them in relation of the Employment Equity Act and how to eliminate issues of violence and harassment. Section 10 of the Employment Equity Act, honorable members, actually gives all enforcement powers to the CCMA and the labor court to deal with unfair discrimination disputes inclusive of harassment and also to issue awards which they can later also enforce to ensure that complainants or employees are able to access justice. In terms of the way forward, which is our last slide, honorable members, the last slide, colleague, thank you very much. We wanted to highlight to honorable members that the code is in NECLEC and we envisage that the final code will be finalized and published for implementation by end of March 2020, if not earlier, because we believe that this is a straightforward code and it may not necessarily take longer in the NECLEC processes. And if it's finalized by this year, Chair, we will advise the Minister to publish it before the end of March 2022. In terms of advocacy campaign, we are continuing after the final code has been published. We'll conduct national campaigns in 2020 to raise awareness on the final code, and our target audience will be employers, employees, employers organizations, trade unions, HR practitioners, academics, civil society, and any other interested parties like our international academics normally attend our roadshows because they want to check our labor laws and see what we are doing to comply to our international obligations. I thank you, Chairperson and honorable members, for giving us this opportunity to share this information with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Quite a very empowering presentation. And I would just want to check if are there any questions from members, I mean questions of clarity and whatever.
Madam Chair, Michael Bagram.
Honorable Bagram, who else?
Mkondo.
Honorable Mkondo, who else?
Honorable Inanna.
Yes, Honorable Inanna, who else? Come again. Honorable Bagram, then Honorable Mkondo, and Honorable Inanna, in that order.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm listening to this, and obviously I believe that most of what you've said is covered in other codes and other pieces of legislation. In fact, a lot of it outlined by this presentation right in the beginning. But yeah, the code does seem to coalesce everything together into one code, which is good. But don't you think it's going to necessitate some amendments to, for instance, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, where there is an outline there of the leave, for instance? And I would suspect that to make it legal and to probably enforce, for instance, extra leave pay because of sexual harassment, for instance, one would expect some sort of amendment to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. There are other instances where I could refer to other legislation, but I don't think this needs to be debated right now. But I personally think the code is a good one and does seem to coalesce a lot of what we've already got in different parts of the law and brings it under one document. So thank you very much for that. I'm finished, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bagram. Honourable Mkondo.
Thanks, Chair. I welcome the presentation. It's quite informative. But Chair, I want to present some clarity-seeking questions to the presenter. The first one, Chair, will be the alleged new trend of employers deliberately exposing their employees to COVID-19. I just want to check as to according to the analysis of the presenter, is that covered in the draft, and am I understanding it very well that the advocacy campaign it targets, amongst other interested parties, the employees, and to suggest that
As this is a draft, if it is, it reaches its final stages, maybe some pamphlets focusing on key concepts and activities be done in all official languages for the employees, for the benefit of the employees, Chair, because it will be of no use to have such a very good document that benefits employees and they don't understand it, or a majority of them don't understand it. The last one, Chair, I want to check when they talk about the legislative framework, they referred to the constitution, and that people may not be discriminated against in relation to language and birth. I just want the clarity that can birth be explained further. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Inanna.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I do welcome the presentation made. But the issue that I want to raise of concern for me, Chairperson, is the issue of the perpetrators. I know the presentation covered a lot about the employees or the people who are victims at the workplace. What happened to the people that are perpetrating this violence against women? Because we are having a very serious issues with how in the society outside women are being handled as far as sexual harassment is concerned. But what is happening in the workplace about the managers, the supervisors, and all those people who are perpetrating this this act of violating the women's rights? My understanding, Chairperson, would be that there needs to be a legislation that would say that in event that a person comes forward to lay such a serious complaint against the perpetrator, there must be equal drastic measures that are going to be taken against the perpetrator, so that we deal with these issues of women being abused in all aspects. And it needs, therefore, to be formally made from the legislation that compels or forces the management to take such actions against those people who are perpetrating this violent act. I therefore need a clarity, Chairperson, around that aspect. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Inan. From my side, is that I think in welcoming this very profound and powerful presentation, which is also empowering, is that you did say that you have got you have campaigns and whatever at the workplace, but there are still a number of workers that are perishing in silence due to harassment, either sexual, bullying, and how do you ensure that you encourage them to speak out as the country is encouraging gender-based violence and femicide in the country and encouraging communities, because the stereotype patriarchy which is taking place at home in the communities eventually land at the workplace. Men that are not prepared to be led by women, either they harass them psychologically or sexually, or the undermining will fall under psychological. How then do you ensure that
as much as you do have that those whole soft stewards, because those soft stewards at the end of the day are also members of the community, coming from homes, and there are institutions that are contributing to this in terms of how the men will see women. And also the this thing of that women are also perpetrators of sexual harassment, psychologically and otherwise. How then do you speak out so that the entire community, the entire citizenry of South Africa understands the impact of that at a workplace? I'm raising this because about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was listening to a phone-in program by Umhlobo Wenene, which I found it very profound, of males that were talking about how they are being harassed at a workplace by females. And therefore, the community radio stations, don't you think of also having that program? As government has been having a program through this Department of Justice, Social Development, and Education in terms of bullying at the workplace, at schools, is it not important that as the Department of Labor in your program, as you are outlining your program, your campaigns, is that you also I know you may not be having money, maybe you are to pay, but it's important that this thing of gender-based violence, sexual harassment, all sorts of harassment at the workplace, workers are encouraged to talk about them. And I'm happy that you say there is going to be training. It must not be only training of judges, in the labor courts, but it must be also training of managers, senior managers. It must be also training of politicians, because politicians, we do have constituencies. We have got workers in those constituents offices. We've got workers in our offices. How then do we that balance? I'm saying I may be raising some other things that you may have raised them in this presentation, but which some of them, at your time, having listened to all of us, you will then have to pick them up and escalate them and make them to be more understandable. Not only, as I'm saying, not only trade unions, political parties, because there are people that are employed in those political parties, in those offices. And all those must really understand that sexual harassment at a workplace, it's something that is not to happen at all. And people must be encouraged not to keep quiet. Otherwise, they are going to die in silence. They are going to be at home. At home, they are going to be nervous wrecks. When they are to go at work, they don't find any joy in going to work because they are a wreck. There's a difference in cautioning a person who is not doing his work and a process where somebody undermines the intellect and the integrity of a person on the basis of either the person is disabled, the person is a female, the person is gay, and the person is ugly, or the person thinks that he is rich. Last thing is that there's a phenomenon that is creeping in. I want to check from you if that is not another form of harassment, ageism. Young people have got now a tendency, I'm not raising this because I'm old and I feel intimidated. Young people have got now a tendency of talking about age, and it's more in the political parties, but I'm told it's also creeping in the workplace when these young people are coming in who are educated, who are managers, who are managing old people. Don't you think that and old people, when they look into young, these young people, so I'm saying that's why I'm saying ageism. Don't you think that it's another form of racism, ageism? It's another form of harassment that is to be looked into and be discouraged. Thank you. I'm done. You may respond.
Chair.
Yes.
Thank you for the question. I'm going to request the colleagues to respond, Mr. Mkhaliphi and Mama Shelle, and then I'll come in at the end, Chair. Thank you.
No, that's fine. They may respond. Ungola wena ke Mr. Mkhaliphi, asimthi lo muntu ungolayo. Siva wena.
Sorry, Chair. Xa usebenza endlini, indlu encinci, kufuneke ngokuharasa ifamily uba ingakuphazamisi.
Alright.
Just kule question, ndizawuphendula nje iiquestion ezimbalwa then umntu wakhe angene. Kule issue eraiswa ngu-honorable uBakrain on whether i-BCA need to be amended to cover for more sick leave. The code is not saying that there's more sick leave. The code is saying that employer must take due consideration to grant more sick leave. It does not say that sick leave is entitled. Now, if members of parliament and the committee want to amend the BCA to give more sick leave, that's something different. But as the code says, the code does not ask for that. It says, employer, we're applying at your, out of your good heart. Yes, a person who's reported a sexual case of harassment in your organization. Now, the after effects of that, the person has gone for treatment, psychological treatment, and all other sort of treatment. They've exhausted their sick leave. You should then consider as an employer giving more sick leave to that employee so that they do not suffer. The question about what happened to perpetrators. Remember, there's two issues here. If somebody does something wrong, the code talks to the responsibility of the employer. If I, as an employee, harass my colleague report the case, the employer must take action. There must be policies in the company. Now, whether those policies are fair, are reasonable, they take enough action, it's an issue that if they are challenged, will be taken up at the CCMA and the Labour Court as you go on. But if a perpetrator is found guilty by the company process, then that perpetrator is dismissed. That's what happened to the perpetrator. It's dismissed if the process finds that it warranted dismissal. Now, it's harassment. Nothing prevents the person who's harassed on top of that to report a criminal case and see whether they can take it criminally. That it's not enough to say the person has been dismissed, therefore and they can raise a criminal case on it and let the criminal case take its course on that. Now, the issue that is raised by the Honorable Chair about how do we encourage and make sure that people come out. The advocacy that Tenfoy can talk about is important in this. And the people that have gone through this process must also talk about it. But we must remember, this is about power. Now, harassment happens at work, it happens at home. Now, people look at their situation and say, if I report this, I come forward, I speak about this, what are the risks for me? If it's not in the workplace, would the person who's you exercising their power over me make it worse. Some of it is about power, economic power. Some of it is about tired as you say, at home, because men take certain decisions. And therefore, in ensuring that people come forward, we've got to talk about it. They've got to see that there's protection, that there are consequences when people do these things. But there's not going to be one solution, because people, as I've said, it's about power, it's about resources. They're going to look at what are the risks associated with me on this. Would it cause me to be in more misery than out of it if this happens? Those are all of the issues that we need to be talking about and encourage people and put the protection around those people so that they are able to live their life even after this process. It's easier at work because the responsibility is for them, the employer, to do that. When this happens out of work, outside the workplace, at home, with your family, with friends, it becomes more difficult in terms of that. And so I think, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mkalipi. And Chair, there was a question that we received from an Honorable Mkondo regarding the department considering the development of pamphlets that summarizes the key concepts of this code, which may be translated into other official languages to ensure that all employees can understand their rights in terms of harassment. We thank the Honorable Member. This is an area that will explore and make sure that we develop pamphlets that gives an executive summary, and together with the National Translation Services will request them to translate it into other officials, and we can also distribute this pamphlet through our trade union federations to ensure that it reaches all employees in the different workplaces, and will also distribute it to all employers. And I think it's a good suggestion, Honorable Mkondo, that we should explore these other mechanisms to publicize the code to all employees and employers. There was also another question that seeks clarity from Honorable Mkondo regarding what we mean about BEPS. In the Constitution, in our Section 1 of the Employment Equity Act, when we refer to birth, we are referring to a place of birth, that people should not be unfairly treated or unfairly discriminated or harassed based on their place of birth. If you come from the rural areas, you shouldn't be treated differently from those people that were born in the urban areas. And we know at times in workplaces, people are being unfairly treated or discriminated or harassed solely on the basis that they are not sophisticated enough like those that were born in the urban areas. That's why the place of birth as a prohibited ground refers to Honorable Mkondo. Just an example, that rural vis-a-vis urban, or the fact that you are from the township and I was born in the villages does not necessarily mean I need to be harassed when I'm in the workplace. There was another issue raised by Honorable Chair, that the issue of ageism. That's what the Honorable Chair referred to. Age is actually a prohibited ground, both in Section 9(3) of the Constitution and Section 6(1) of the Employment Equity Act. People should not be unfairly discriminated or harassed solely on the basis that they have aged or they are young or old. Therefore, already in the in this code, we have actually protected all employees, irrespective of their age, against harassment, Chairperson. I think we have covered all areas that were raised by honourable members. Thank you, Acting DG. You said you will come in after we are done. Thank you.
Thanks, and through you, Chair. May I?
Yes, ma'am, you may.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chair. I just wanted to add a few things. Firstly, to emphasize that what colleagues have presented, the set of code of good practice on the prevention of elimination and harassment in the workplace. Inherently, code of good practices are meant to, amongst other things, to assist workplaces to be able to improve their own in-house policies. So this is by no means a replacement for HR policies that should enable dealing with issues around stereotyping, harassment, and so on. The code of good practice is meant to enhance and empower the employer as well as the so I thought I should emphasize that, Chair. And there was an issue that was raised by Honorable Mkhonto on whether is there a trend that we're observing of employers that are deliberately exposing COVID, employers that have tested COVID-19 positive to workplaces. Actually, we have received few of such cases, and these are dealt with in the context of occupational health and safety, as we know that COVID-19 is a hazardous biological agent and is covered as such. And it is said that we do find cases and complaints where a person will say, I tested positive, however I was forced by my employer to still present myself to come to the work. So we deal with those type of cases in that context. Otherwise, colleagues have covered the rest. Or the last thing, just on what Honorable Bagrain has put forth. In my view, I don't think there's a need really to amend the BCEA, because when you talk about sick leave, it's a wide range. And when you look at the issues of harassment, they normally present themselves either in a mental or psychosocial or physiological way, which would then in what is currently offered in terms of me. So I just want to go towards that area. Thank you, Chair.
Acting DG. Honourable members, there is the presentation that we have been given. DM, are you still around? Is the DM still around?
Yes, Chair, I'm still here, Chair.
Oh, okay. Is there anything you want to throw in before we close?
No, thanks very much, Chair. I think we presented this ILO Convention 190 to the Portfolio Committee. We wanted honourable members to go through and satisfy themselves in terms of what needs to be done. And I think the onus now is with the committee to take this matters up to the relevant platforms, be it Parliament and GOP, for further engagement, so that we are able to deal with this matter. I think the issue of what has been discussed, Honourable Chairperson, like the issue of bullying in the workplace, it is so bad that yesterday one woman died in while working. I mean, she had to go to work while she was sick, and she died in the factory floor. And I think even if we can come with all the legislations issues of enforcement, if you have weaker organized labor or labor organizations, I think also some of this information, I think that we need to continue, either as a portfolio committee or ourselves as a leadership, we need to continue to engage labor organizations and on these matters into how they are supposed to take these matters up, how were the shop stewards in the factory store in Northwest, in Hartbeesfontein, were able to allow a sick patient to go to work and subsequently dying in the factory floor, and nothing happened, and production continued as if nothing has happened. They never even called for, and if you wonder whether are there occupational and health safety officers in the workplace, those are some of the things that our inspectors need to look into. But remember, as we continuously say, our inspectors, the number of our enforcers are not necessarily equivalent to the numbers of those workplaces that we are supposed to enforce on. So there are a lot of things that are happening, that are taking place, that we need to correct, that we are unable to do so. So it is therefore important for honorable members to support these bills and fast track the approval for this to be enforced, so that whatever needs to be done has to happen quicker. I just want to rest my case there, Chair, and I want to thank our presenters for having eloquently presented to your honorable self in the manner. I think they've extensively dealt with all the other issues that might have been hanging. But should there be any further outstanding issues that we think we might not necessarily have dealt with, as always, I'm sure Honorable Chairperson will refer such for further engagement to our department. I want to thank you, Chair, for this opportunity.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, GM. I think this subject is a subject that we need to talk about it continuously, and as this committee, we have got that responsibility so that it's being seen by the citizenry that really we, this thing of balancing gender-based violence and femicide and harassment and gender-based violence at a workplace. So it's something that the unfortunate part is that we may be seeing some of our trade unions either being weak, or maybe because, you know, the level of poverty and unemployment, that a person will rather die in silence because he thinks that if I report this, I'm going to be expelled. It's quite sad. It's quite hurting. It's something that we then have to ensure that we assist, but we also make it people understand that patriarchy, it's something that is to be talked about and dealt with, and all the institutions that are alleged to be perpetrating it have to be talked to be talked to. I'm raising this because at the end, if I am how I am brought up at home to know that I am to be submissive, wherever I go, wherever I am, even if I'm a politician, even if I'm a worker, even if I'm a professional, but how then to ensure that I know it's a struggle within a struggle. It's something that is very difficult, but as we were instructed by powers to be in Parliament, that committees must then begin to talk about this, because it's something that is quite gender-based violence and femicide. But from our side, I didn't raise that we must also be talking about gender-based violence at a workplace. I think what Honorable Mkhondo has raised is very, very important and profound. A simple language pointed so that people understand what is it that really we are, what then becomes their role also and their responsibility as the, and ourselves when we are reported to, we're reported as somebody comes and reports, don't just keep quiet. I know it's quite very challenging. It's quite very challenging. Maybe it's easier said than done if you say you report. Even when you report, a person that you report to either downplay it or makes you to feel guilty as if you are the one, it's your fault that you were. So it's, our workplaces are challenged with that. But thank you very much. What we will do is that we will allow members to go through the presentation, digest it, and then when we come back, we'll then have to adopt this ratification of the Convention 190, so that as much as we are being applauded as the country, we don't delay some of these things that are very important in the terms of the international space, in terms of ILO. Having said that, honourable members, thank you very much. It has been a long day, but it's a day that we were compelled to do all the work that we're supposed to do. Until we meet again, you go and do your constituents' work, but in doing that, in between our, please take care, stay safe. Those that I do for vaccination, they must really go and vaccinate and assist our people and demystify this theory that is outside, that if you are vaccinated, this and that. But at the end, it's important that this being done. Having said
thank
that,
you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It was absolutely delightful today. Thank you.
Yes, until we meet again. Thank
yes.
you.
Thank you.
I'm told in Cape Town it's raining cats and dogs. Hmm? How are you surviving?
Yeah, that's not easy. Eh? I've got a hat on.
Goodbye, colleagues. Goodbye, colleagues.